Don't. You don't have to, Michael.
Michael.
It's blood.
Michael.
Yeah, blood. Sure.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Whoa, what's going on? This is not the proposed episode 32 you were promised. This is a special episode 32. This is Dragonreel, and we're going to talk about a Halloween-themed movie tonight. So we are not going to talk about Eye of the Tiger just yet. We are going to talk about The Lost Boys for this episode. I am Chris, and I am eating maggots.
They're not
you
maggots.
You sure are.
It's rice.
No, it's maggots.
It's rice, Chris.
Let me
it's
have
definitely
this.
Maggots.
No, it's just, definitely
just,
rice.
Just let me have this.
No, it's, okay. It's maggots. It's definitely maggots.
And in chair number two, she was this close to being called Moonbeam. It's Sharon.
I don't know if I'd like Moonbeam.
What about Moonshine?
I'd like some moonshine.
I don't know that I'd be like Mrs. Moonshine.
Mrs. Moonshine.
Mrs. Moonshine Dudley? I don't know.
Back in San Francisco, I used to run moonshine.
You know that Grandpa did. Anyway.
Yeah, you know we did.
Speaking of Grandpa.
And yeah, one juice, thing about Dragonreel I never could stomach, it's Pete.
There you go. Thank you.
Ooh.
Back at you, Bernard Hughes.
Oh, yeah. That was quite nasty.
Your freaking headband and everything.
Yeah, don't mess with the headband granddad.
The wow. Headband granddad. Yes, indeed.
So we're going to talk about Lost Boys.
So there was a movie that came out in 1987 that changed my life.
It changed your life?
Was that Willow?
It was not.
It was Lost Boys?
It was the Star Wars TV special.
Oh, there you go.
Wait, what does that have to do with Lost Boys?
No, the Ewok movie is what I was going for. But that joke would have been a lot funnier if I had the right movie. But
that's true.
But no, Lost Boys came out in theaters. I went and saw it with my friend Kevin. And we devoured that movie.
Oh,
we absorbed that soundtrack. And it was just a change in our life.
It was a fairly kicking soundtrack, I'm not going to lie.
I was just going to say that. Pete stole my line.
And I don't know anything about the score. I couldn't tell you anything about the score of the movie because all I know is the produced music that is the soundtrack that is band the music with the bands.
Yeah, I love that. And
I liked the really large guy playing the sax doing the cover.
Tim Capello. Yes.
Yeah.
Capello or Capella? I can't remember. Which is embarrassing because this music has been a part of my life for so long.
You know, you say Capella, I say Capola.
Yeah. He's a Coppola?
Right. So, there was not Bruckheimer, the other guy that makes shitty movies.
Schumacher,
yes.
The Joel
Chris.
Schumacher.
Oh my gosh.
So somebody told me that I didn't pay attention to directors and stuff, and like after right. like years of panning the two Batman movies that sucked, somebody said, you know that's the same director for Lost Boys, right? I went, no, it's not.
Wait. You mean
it's
the one...
also the same director for 8mm and The Incredible Shrinking Woman.
Was yes. that the Batman that I liked?
I hope not.
With Jack
Me
Nicholson?
Me too.
With
no.
No. That
no,
was Burton.
No.
That
oh,
was Tim
okay.
Burton.
The
okay.
first... So, he made a movie called Batman Forever.
Okay.
Joel Schumacher did.
All right.
It wasn't Batman Forever, but it seemed like it.
Oh, it seemed like forever in a day.
And then he made the one where... Really, Arnold Schwarzenegger does nothing but chew the scenery and make cold puns.
Oh,
Batman and Robin.
Yeah, George Clooney and Robin.
Yep. Wow, okay.
George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah.
So wait, who's going to summarize this movie?
You know what? I think this one's on me.
All
Do
right.
it.
Go for
All
it,
right.
Chris.
Well, this is a retelling of that classic tale. Boy meets girl. Girl has a boyfriend. Boy sees girl again. Boy meets girl again. Girl goes to her boyfriend. Boy... goes with boyfriend, boy drinks boyfriend's blood, boy almost becomes a vampire and then realizes he's becoming a vampire and tries to pull the girl out, and then together they kill the vampire, but that's not the right vampire, and then they finally kill a different vampire, and they live happily ever after.
Yeah,
How many times have we heard that
yeah,
story?
Yeah, it's really typical. Yeah,
talk about tropey.
Right?
I mean, cliche city.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
So... I saw this in theaters in 87, and I did not get the Peter Pan connection. I did not know that Lost Boys was a reference to Peter
Pan. Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That makes me sad.
Pete, I didn't either.
Well, I was a teenager, and I was anything but literary.
I see.
But now that I know that they were originally going to name the mother Wendy, and just the whole all the facts that we just learned as we were researching this.
So other than the title Lost Boys, the only connection to Peter Pan that remained was Michael.
Yes.
And they say it 118 times in the movie.
And it should have, and Sam should have been Jonathan, but
yes.
Yeah.
Well, the other
he was until the final draft, apparently.
There was a lot of flying in this, though, guys. If you really think about it, there was a lot of scenes.
Right.
There's a whole lot. Well, no. There's a lot of implied flying in this.
Well, there's implied flying, but then there is levitation.
So this...
Oh, no, and I'm not arguing that point, but the point is that through most of the movie,
you
when
don't
they're
see.
Flying,
right.
you don't see it.
Right, and I think this movie did a great technique of
the camera angle?
Showing you less to put in your mind what's really, what you're
It was horrifying.
To.
I mean, I was scared, and I saw this movie when I could still see.
Mm-hmm. And nowadays you look at that and go, they're just making it, kind of on the cheap by, making us fill in the blanks. But
no, it was
not at all. I didn't think that was, I thought that was a good technique as well. I thought that was just actually for once, Jill Schumacher doing good directing.
Right. I mean, it's like with Jaws where they don't actually show the shark forever.
Yeah, I was scared of that too.
Oh yeah. Because that's the whole point. It's supposed to build.
Right.
And when you finally see it, it's like,
so
oh
the
my
Lost
God.
Boys of Peter Pan never grow old and
never
die. And
but they must feed. No,
right.
That's not Peter Pan. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
So, sorry. Pete, I have a question about this.
Sure.
It's the one problem I have with Lost Boys.
Okay. Only the one?
Only one?
So while I love this movie, I see problems.
You beat me to it.
You
beat me to it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, why do we always have to talk about problems?
Well, that's kind of the job.
Okay,
of a
but this is my question. This is my question.
Matt,
at the end of the movie,
yes.
Max says, it was always you, Wendy. I mean, Lucy. It was always you, Lucy. I was after you. I thought if I got your boys in, it would be easier for you to. Accept.
To
you know?
Fold like
to
a house
fold
of cards.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, because he said he wanted a mother.
Boys need a mother. That's what he said.
Boys need a mother. He actually said that. And but here's the thing.
Yes.
Michael was supposed to be Star's first kill. So I'm confused because David says to... No, David doesn't say it. Star tells Michael that Michael was going to be her first kill. So David wanted her to kill him. But if Max ordered for David not to kill him, then...
Sharon's whole confusion comes down to when did he give that order?
Oh, okay. So basically he must have given the order after Lucy had come in for the job interview, quote unquote.
Right.
So when they met.
When she went in looking for the
moment,
yes, not long
the
after.
They met.
When she found a lost boy.
Not the moment they met, but sometime between her leaving the video store and them going after Michael. I think what had happened was it just was serendipity that they happened to see Michael. And then David said, no, he's going to be your first kill. And that's why she came back and lured him, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going? I'm going for a ride kind of thing,
Right.
Because that happens the next night, I think.
That is the next night. The first night is the... So the first night, Michael sees Star.
Yeah.
And then they together watch... Michael and Sam together watch Star get on David's bike and ride away.
Right.
That same night, Lucy meets Max.
Oh, it is the same night.
Lucy and Max are both references to Dracula, by the way.
Yes. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, the way you guys are explaining it, I'll accept that.
So, I have a question, though.
Yes.
Like, in the scene where Lucy comes into the video store, she has found a lost boy.
Boy, yes.
Now, how many people saw that and went, oh my God, is that what this movie's going to be about? I'm leaving.
Not me.
It's going to be like 90 minutes of Lucy just finding lost boys on the boardwalk and bringing them into the video store to find their mom.
Already knew it was about vampires, so it wasn't going to be one of those things that maybe, So, no, not going to happen.
I don't think it would have been a
better
movie.
I saw it in college, by the way. And it was not in the movie theater. I don't know if that matters, but...
You're just a Johnny-come-lately.
Can I say I loved it? I loved it. I think we all loved it. I loved it when I saw it.
I saw it with my then girlfriend Kate.
More than 25 years ago. Oh my God!
Yeah,
like 31 years ago.
Yeah.
Holy baloney!
Yep.
And I have to say, I liked it just as much.
Here's the thing, though. Is it fantasy?
Yes. Chris and I actually had an argument about this.
Kind of.
No, so, it's fantasy because
there are certain tropes.
It's got a supernatural element to it.
Right.
Okay.
There are certain tropes that ultimately categorize a movie as far as like who the, you know, how you find it, how you reference it in other things.
I'm going to give this to you.
The presence of vampires makes it a horror movie.
Okay, but stop for a minute.
Not necessarily, because if you can think of the vampires as a monster. Mm-hmm. The whole story is a guy rescuing a damsel from a monster who's got her in his thrall.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but here, listen
and
to
so
this.
And so that's a knight versus dragon story.
Yes.
That's, you know, any time that you've got some damsel in a tower story, it's straight on fantasy. Plus, a lot of the early fairy tales and fantasy stories were originally horror stories. They were meant to be moralistic tales to frighten children.
I agree. And also, Chris, you have said that illusion is magical, and magic equals fantasy.
I think it was Doug Henning that said that, actually.
If that's the case, then The Shadows, the next movie that I want to watch.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, there is definitely illusionary magic in this. The whole
thing. I'm breaking the rules of Dragon Reel to make a special Halloween episode. By putting something that is really classified by all sources that I've been able to find as a horror comedy.
As horror.
But it's also fantasy. Wait, we just proved that it's fantasy.
No,
Pete and
you
I
proved to you.
No, we proved to everybody.
I think I proved to the audience. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we've proved to the audience.
But we're going to need some feedback from the audience on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know, but I definitely see how it's horror, most definitely, but I also see how it's fantasy. Yes. I think if there wouldn't have been that whole scene of the illusionary magic, and it wasn't even just in the sunken hotel, it was also with the lights, it was in the house. With the noises and the lights, there was a lot of magical stuff.
Well, okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I agree that it was magic. I agree that impossible things happened, and I agree that, you know, vampires at their very nature are magical beings. But I think that the vampire
and they're monsters.
But I think that the vampire trope belongs solidly in horror and not fantasy.
Horror are also fantasy.
Yes, but I think that it's also a separate genre. I don't think it's a subgenre of fantasy. I think it's a separate genre that also uses some of the same techniques.
I have to concede that. I think you're right. Because there is science fantasy as well, and it's not strictly true fantasy. It's just
And we did Star Wars, and I don't have a problem with that.
We didn't do Star Wars.
Yes, we did.
When did we do Star Wars?
Not the first one. We did The Force Awakens.
We did?
Go back through the
catalog. Oh,
yes.
We love you.
No, we
did.
We did. Yeah, we did.
Boy,
yeah.
It's been a long, long September and October.
I guess it has.
Yeah.
As my son's getting ready to go off to college, I'm going absolutely insane.
Oh, my gosh.
So to actually seriously start, you know, summarizing the plot, it starts out that Lucy got divorced and took her two sons. We don't know anything about their father. Or her previous husband.
Well,
we don't even know if her previous husband is their father.
He was a jerk.
We don't know that.
Wait, yes, we do. They got divorced.
Maybe
she
was a jerk.
Said one of the reasons why I left him is because he never believed in the closet
monster. He didn't believe in the closet monster, yeah.
So clearly, the man has no imagination. So I'm willing to bet banker and an accountant. Maybe an engineer.
I think the grandfather says something about, like, her moving back home.
Yeah, he said she's the only woman he knows who didn't better her position by getting divorced.
Yeah, so she didn't like her husband. I mean, he didn't
like
her
husband.
Maybe
he was a lawyer.
Husband.
Oh, sorry, Bill. I mean,
So this is the kind of guy, this is how excited they are to be there.
Looks like he's dead.
No, he's just a deep sleeper.
If he's dead, can we go back to Phoenix?
So that's how thrilled they are to be there.
There is a fade. I'll wait until we get to the underground hotel.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
Okay.
Okay, so the two transplants are obviously not happy to be there. She's there because she doesn't have anywhere else to go, and so she's going to go live with her crackpot father, who's right. very much into taxidermy.
Yes,
and
he is.
Also, it also introduces the first concept of life after death in the movie.
Tell me how.
Taxidermy.
Yes. Okay.
So he's the first. Thematic. He's the first one to show the motif of there being a life after death.
An unchanging existence after death.
Yes.
Not really life,
right?
But
not really life, but continuation.
Something.
And then there are other little things in their motif talking about, you know, regarding life eternal. There's the electric Samson machine outside the comic book store.
I didn't see that one.
There's something in the concert. Now I can't remember what it is. Mm-hmm. But there are different.
Oh, I agree. They're all over the place. Yeah, they're little Easter eggs if you're looking. Too.
Yeah. There are also a surprising number of stakes.
Yes. Yes, there are
in the movie as well as a motif as a sub-motif.
The stakes are high, is what you're saying.
They are, and everywhere.
The number of stakes are high.
I don't remember that from 30 years ago. I'm sure you guys are right on with that, but
yeah. There's a lot of foreshadowing of things that are going to happen in this movie.
If you know what's going to happen,
it's very, very obvious.
I liked the setting. I liked that it was on a boardwalk and it was an amusement park.
Yeah.
It made it exciting.
So that whole scene of the vampires being punks in leather jackets with metal studs, I think really informed the Vampire the Masquerade game.
Oh, the Bruja?
Oh, very much so.
That whole motif feels like
very, very
like
much
almost
so.
All the art in the original Vampire the Masquerade game book.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Motorcycles. Very much so. Leather jackets.
But we're not doing a Rule Zero podcast. We're doing Dragon Rail.
Right.
We are. But we can cross the streams. Well, it's okay.
But I was talking about the setting. I thought that it was cool that it was set.
Right. Well, the setting made me think of the motif of, you know, and like a lot of the, a couple of the pieces of fiction in the vampire book take place in an amusement park or boardwalk.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. And so this, as far as like, I think it holds up in any time except for things like, you know, little lines like this.
There's no TV. Have you seen a TV? I haven't seen a TV, Mike.
You know what it means when there's no TV? No MTV.
Well, so back in the day when MTV actually played music.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
God, I hate being such a fogey to have to say that, but I really do miss that part of MTV.
I don't even think anybody... Do people still make music videos?
We've got to move.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're up on YouTube all the time.
We've got to move the color TV. I'm sorry.
Vivo and YouTube definitely are the homes of where people send their music videos now.
I didn't mind that line. I don't think that dated it.
Well, no. I mean, it's the other cultural parts about it, like a video store.
Oh, yes, yes, there is.
Okay.
That.
You know, and the absence of cell phones.
Yes.
Those are all things that make.
Yes, but you know, sadly, I didn't miss that.
Oh, it's not a matter of missing it. It's just what dates it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's one of those things where...
Everybody in my demographic was also the child of a baby boomer who,
right.
you know, could have said, you know, could have said this exact same thing.
What's your name?
Star.
Oh, your folks too, huh?
What do you mean?
Ex-hippies. I came this close to being called Moonbeam, a moon child.
He was going to be called Moonbeam?
He was going to be called
so
Moonbeam.
So was I.
Or Moonshine.
Yeah. You know how that would have changed the movie, though?
So were you. What if he were called Moonshadow and then he could just follow her around?
That's true. She could be followed by a Moonshadow. But mm-hmm. no, if he had been named Moonbeam, then the movie would go something like this.
How are those maggots? Maggots, Moonbeam. You're eating maggots. How do they taste?
You're eating maggots, Moonbeam.
You're eating maggots, Moonbeam.
Oh, you're a funny guy.
And they would
Chris.
Say Moonbeam 118 times in this movie.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I can't believe the number of times they said Michael.
But, you know...
So somebody collected them.
It still worked.
They did?
I was going to... So
was,
I had,
Chris was going
to
do it.
I had
it.
Set up to the recording to capture all of the Michaels. And then I went...
Good Lord.
There's an internet.
It must be
I can't
out there.
Believe nobody's done this already.
Right, exactly.
What, are you going to play a little bit of that?
No. I didn't record it because...
You didn't. Okay.
Maybe I'll stick it at the end of the recording tonight.
Okay.
Or you can do a link to the wherever you found
it. Yeah, yeah. But it was, you know, it wasn't even hard to find.
Oy.
I thought they casted this... Wait, would you say casted?
Cast.
Cast. Okay. I thought they cast this... with a lot of things in mind. It was funny.
Was it the hope of the two Coreys going on to massive stardom?
Yeah, so right after this, they did License to Drive, and then...
Exactly.
Well, there was a problem.
Which was the first appearance of Heather Graham.
We read about...
That I recall, anyway.
...a problem that which Corey was it that was doing drugs?
Well, Corey Feldman was doing drugs, you know, that got him in trouble on the set.
Yeah. So he got kicked out, Pete, and then he got rehired the next day.
No, I'm sure. I remember when he was going through that troubled spot and why... He was so upset with Corey Haim when he went down that road. So,
yeah. So they were lifelong friends until Corey Haim's death, just a few years ago.
Yep.
And Corey Feldman is still around, and I believe Corey Haim was one of the early casualties of the famous people succumbing to painkillers.
Yes. Oxycodone.
The opiate problem.
Yeah.
As they call it now.
Well, they were great. I loved the scenes. In the comic shop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably because I'm a total geek.
So what's the movie where it's got John Lithgow in it, and there's a kid that builds an atomic bomb?
The Manhattan Project? No.
Yes, no, that is exactly what it's called.
Is that it?
The Manhattan Project? So after I saw that after I saw this one.
Okay.
And I thought that was Corey Haim in that movie for a long time.
No.
Hey, do you have a couple lines from the comic store?
I do.
Could you give us one?
All right.
So that's kind of the cool transition is the fact that, you know, Michael obviously wants to lose Sam, and what does Sam find? His passion.
Right.
Comic books, baby.
Actually, I'm looking for a Batman number 14.
That's a very serious book, man.
Only 5 in existence.
4, actually. I'm always looking out for the other 3.
Hell yes, you are.
Absolutely false, but okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah, but, you know.
We'll go with it for the show.
He's a serious collector.
Right.
And he knows, he's trying to say, like...
I wish they had actually picked a book that there were only 4 copies of, though.
Yeah, me too.
Oh. Guys, I think you're being a little too nerdy there.
The other thing that I like is the fact that Corey Haim is obviously, you know, going through a gender identity issue because the poster's in his room.
The Rob Lowe poster?
Oh, my God.
That was Schumacher.
Rob Lowe looking hot.
Schumacher.
That was Schumacher's
decision.
No,
I know, because he had done St. Elmo's Fire, I know, but still, it was...
As soon as
I saw that, I was like, good for you, testing your gender identity. I'm proud of you, boy.
So I didn't notice it when I saw it as a teenager, but watching it this time, I went, you know, for the 80s, that's really kind of calling out... sexual issues.
But you were analyzing it this time.
Right.
Exactly.
Who watched it the first time and analyzed? I mean, we must have seen this movie maybe, I don't know, I must have seen it 8 times.
I've seen it 167 times, and it keeps getting funnier every single time I see it.
Not to mention you're talking to a dead guy, so what do you think?
Hey, we did Beetlejuice too.
Yes, we did.
You know, I think we had that same kind of discussion if Beetlejuice
about whether it was horror or fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might have. Yeah.
We do this every Halloween.
So yeah. Thank God we're not being repetitious.
Well, I still maintain that I'm putting this in on sufferance.
Okay, but,
Oh, my goodness.
But I think the Corys and the frogs, you know, as a Venn diagram, you know, like, these are Corys, these are frogs, and there's one overlap.
Well,
I thought the 3 of them together were
amazing.
A great part of this movie.
Oh, they're a huge part of the movie.
The frogs actually annoyed me the first time I saw the movie. And then I was like, lighten up, Francis.
Lighten up, Francis.
I just had to call out that it appears that their parents never move. So
their parents are the burnout hippies on the,
leaning up against
on
the TV.
Boardwalk, yeah.
Yeah, when do they go to the bathroom, and how?
They probably have a catheter.
Oh,
you think so?
Yeah, I know if you do a bunch of Quaaludes and you're out for a few days, then you're probably, you know, catheter.
How do you know this?
You've got gems like this.
There's a number on the back. And pray, you never need to call us.
I'll pray I never need to call you. Sure.
That was so in subsequent after the first time I watched it, lines like that really carried this movie for me because there was a lot of drama in this movie, but there's also a lot of joy in this movie.
I wouldn't say there's a lot of drama. I'd say there's a lot of melodrama in this movie.
Yeah.
But
there is a lot of joy. There's a lot of very funny bits.
I love that other than the Frog Brothers, everybody plays it straight.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Can we talk about vampires?
Sure. Alex Winter.
Can we talk? So,
Bill.
What I want to ask you guys is, you think that this movie sort of set the stage for other vampire stories and for because I saw some similarities to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the show.
I think the face makeup defined the motif that Joss Whedon used later.
So you think saw
it defined defined the aesthetic that Joss Whedon used for Buffy.
Oh, I'm sure he saw Lost Boys.
Well, and the term vamped out.
Right.
Well, don't forget that there was also a movie called Vamp that had come out prior to this.
I never
saw
it.
As well as Fright Night. So there was
a lot of tongue-in-cheek
vampire.
There's
a lot of resource material to draw from, too. So, I mean, that was kind of a big deal.
Hmm.
Right.
Okay. Hey,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, some of the stuff that I liked in the movie about vampires was the dinner scene between Max and the kids.
The Frog Brothers, yeah, and
the mom and
Sam and the mom.
And they were testing him, but they had already invited him.
So here's the resolution of that scene.
Yes.
And so here's the setup of that scene.
No. It's not cheese, it's garlic.
But you hate garlic, don't you?
No, I like garlic. It's just a little much.
It's a little much.
So later on, not Marco, the one that actually survives to make it to the house, says garlic doesn't work. So
right.
Other than that, the Frog Brothers were right about everything they said.
Exactly.
And so
my favorite one is the point with, ooh, someone has bad breath, and they all immediately look at Max.
Right, and then it's the
dog. And she looks at Nanook, Nanook, would you please go away?
Yes.
they were right about holy water.
That was a sitcom moment.
They were right about, they said, some vampire, you know, it's very messy, they say.
Oh, yeah, no, they're huge on for the foreshadowing on this
part here.
I think I should warn you all, when a vampire bites it, it's never a pretty sight. No two bloodsuckers go out the same way. Some yell and scream, some go quietly, some explode, some implode, but all will try to take you with them.
He is 100% correct.
Yes.
I love that. And did they say there really was a comic book made for this movie?
They made a comic book, and the person whose store
it was...
Yes,
it
was
Die Vampire.
Yeah, that would be fun, too.
The person who owns the store that they filmed
in. Vampires Everywhere.
Vampires Everywhere. And there was also, there was another one. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't Vampires Everywhere.
I think it was Die Vampire.
Because
it's the one that on the back says something about a character named LX.
I'm not going to stop the show to look it up, but I know there was a different title.
Gotcha. Okay.
But anyway, every single vampire movie, book, or whatever that is made by a different author creates their own mythos, and the only way you know what's different about vampires in their world is that the characters have to tell you.
Or show you.
And I think it's funny that two 15-year-old boys are the ones who tell the audience everything that is true about vampires in this world.
Well, that's why I like Lost Boys.
They make great Horatio Part 1 and Part 2.
Yes? You mean Hamlet's companion?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Because Horatio tells the audience.
He articulates the text. He articulates the subtext.
Well, yes. I like that the holy water works because holy water should work
against
vampires. I'm being a nerd again. Sorry. Right.
Except for this.
Don't ever invite a vampire into your house, you silly boy. It renders you powerless.
That's the thing they didn't know.
So as a total non sequitur, I got to say that I found out about a story recently that tickled me to death, which was there was a vampire going around as a traveling salesman.
Uh-huh.
And he would go up to a door and engage somebody in conversation, and then he'd accidentally drop his pen. And he'd say, I'm sorry, could you get that for me? And they would hand it back to him, and he'd go, thank you. And they'd say, you're welcome.
Yeah.
But now he's starving because the millennials don't say you're welcome. They say, no problem.
Oh, Pete. Oh, we had to wait for it.
The millennials are also killing the door-to-door vampire business.
Exactly.
No, they
figured that the internet would.
They buy it on eBay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we like the vampires then in this
So I
movie.
Think this, the mythology is pretty well based in everything we already know with enough new information that makes this a separate, you know, a separate mythos.
Well, wasn't Max solid. Clearly eating too?
Yes, he was.
I like
well,
that.
Well, they all eat.
Yeah, David I mean, and they yeah, all they ate the Chinese food.
Paul eats, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't think there are many that explicitly say that vampires can't eat real food.
Right.
I thought
it's just that when
they don't
Michael starting to convert, when he tries to drink the milk, he gets a stomach cramp.
Right. And that's what before he actually drinks any.
He doesn't even consume anything.
Yeah, I thought vampires though, like in the Lestat books, they don't
right.
want
that's
food.
That mythology.
Okay.
That's
right.
a reality that they establish
right.
in those books.
And in that mythology, the reason why is because the food will putrefy in their gut and they have no means of expelling right. it.
Yeah.
So I think there was speaking of the milk carton, I think there was a continuity error there. I think
why, Freddy?
When Michael dropped not the thing on the side of the carton. When Michael dropped the carton, the entire top was open. All four flaps were open. But when the mom picked it up, it was only open for the spout.
Right. Okay. That could be.
Really?
I think so.
Okay, blind people don't care.
Most people don't care.
I mean, who's going to examine the milk carton in the movie?
Well, apparently Chris.
Apparently
you know,
so.
It was just something I noticed
I
this time.
Wow.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
That doesn't make me a bad person.
No, of course not. Of course not. So, the dogs that were guarding Max.
Dog. One dog.
A dog.
Oh, it was a dog?
One, a hound of hell.
One dog made that much noise?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it
It was
did.
A hound of hell.
Yes.
Yes. Oh.
There was also a continuity error with how much of the fence had been ripped away by the dog from shot to shot.
I had a bit of a cognitive dissonance moment in this movie.
Okay.
What was your moment, Pete?
Which was watching the punks around the fire listening to Run DMC.
Yes.
And Aerosmith do Walk This Way.
Yeah. That was not really their jam, right?
No, totally not their jam.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the Aerosmith part would be.
The flip side of that is, in a way, that would be totally punk.
Yeah.
Because they're not falling into the definition of what other people.
That song did not make it into the soundtrack.
Huh. Go figure.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have had to pay for it.
They pay for everything.
That was on the beach with the motorcycle gang.
Yeah, the biker gang.
The biker gang. Oh, well, maybe they just was it playing on a radio?
No, it was the time where they take Michael to the and they're hanging out in the tree,
uh-huh.
And that's when you kind of first see them in full vamp form. Was that still the motorcycle gang? I thought the motorcycle gang guys were the ones who. I know that the leader and the girlfriend got taken out in their car.
Well, I think everybody who is a grown up on the beach and on the boardwalk is a motorcycle gang.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I think that's the you know the culture they're trying to put out there.
No, so. I feel you. It's a Hooters video all over again.
Yeah, they were just saying they were tough dudes.
They were dressed like a biker gang, so I just assumed.
Okay, fair enough.
Or maybe they weren't. Who knows?
Maybe they're just super annoying. You never know.
It could be.
Yeah, I liked the Beastie Boys.
Maybe
song.
They were just bad citizens.
So that was your moment of dissidence.
Of dissonance. Cognitive dissonance.
Dissonance. Okay, dissonance.
My moment of dissonance came much, much earlier in my life.
Oh, my gosh. So, I liked the, I like love stories. I always say this during every...
It wasn't really much of a love story, though. I mean,
no, it really
was like,
wasn't.
You know, they see each other, he follows her. They see each other again,
that's
and she teases him.
That's a love story for teenagers, Chris.
Yeah, I guess.
Chris, you were a teenager. Come on. You see a hot girl, you're in love with her.
So what's the movie where they say that relationships forged under pressure never last?
I don't know.
No idea. But... this one?
But what happens in Romeo and Juliet that everybody calls a love story? I mean, he sees her and he's like, oh.
Whoa.
You know.
Wow, I'm like totally smitten.
Bow chicka wow.
Yeah,
I mean,
man.
What's love anyway? What's love got to do? No, I'm just... I liked it. What do you want to call it then if you don't want to call it romance?
No, it was a love story in there, but it wasn't a very convincing love story. Like, there wasn't much between them.
There's nothing super prominent about it either.
Yeah, but again, teenagers, you see somebody dancing and you're like,
she's hot.
Yeah, she's hot. I'm in love.
I don't think he's really in love with her until he feels like David is totally unworthy. And he's like, no, I'm going to win this girl.
I'm going to try
That's why he looks at her. He looks at him and goes, come on, get on the bike. And she gets on David's bike instead.
Mm-hmm.
Can we also talk about her disappearing, reappearing jacket with the epaulets on it?
Who stars?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
No idea what you guys are talking about.
I guess she had a jacket and then it disappeared?
And then it reappears and then it disappears again.
Oh.
I did not know
it
that.
It must have been in filming, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking they got away with that with having her wear it around her waist.
Oh, okay.
But I wasn't so enamored to rewatch the movie that I had to go through and go, let's see if this is really a
let me flubber. See.
Yeah, I was told that she called Max Ed, which is his actual name. But
yes.
I did not catch it in this viewing.
No, I didn't either.
So interesting about they were going to cast, or Fred Gwynne was being considered for the role of Max. They were going to cast Herman, but instead they went with Herman.
Ha! Huh.
Yeah.
Chris actually, versus, yeah, I
guess. He had to explain that to me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They were going to cast, they wanted, the director?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wanted a blonde to play Star.
Oh, and they got Jamie Gertz. Interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that was Jason Patrick's insistence. And
oh,
I think if she were blonde, it would have been too easy shorthand for innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that she wasn't a blonde. Because I wanted to know, when I watched it the very first time, I wanted to know if Star was playing along with the vampires. I didn't really know the first time that I watched it. I didn't know if she was going to turn out. At one point I thought, oh, well, maybe she's the head vampire. And I just didn't know, and I liked not knowing.
Mm-hmm. I like the fact that the twist on this isn't the fact that it's Michael saving Star from the Gang of Four there, but it's really Max.
Yeah.
Liking the mother?
Pulling all the strings.
And that's another thing where, like, in retrospect, after you've seen the movie once, you see everything so obvious that they're planting, you know, as foreshadowing.
But it wasn't.
But I really didn't catch it the first time.
And what about the scene where you told me that Max was looking scared?
Yeah, I think that was a little bit of a...
A little bit cheesy, but...
I don't know, because I don't know if you can say he looked scared so much as worried, but the scene where the kite appears in his yard...
The vampire combat kite appears in his yard.
So what was the point of that? If he's giving orders to David and the other boys, then why would they, harass him?
I think part of the problem... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Maybe because they were just being annoying teenagers. And that's why he says, maybe it wasn't a look of fear. It was a look of annoyance. But because I can't see, I couldn't tell what the look...
No, it was definitely more of a look of fear, but I think it was... The way that I read this is that he's concerned that David is starting to break away from his influence. Is trying to break away from his influence.
Oh.
That's how I saw it.
That's really deep, what you just said.
Yeah, I know. I'm a pretty deep guy, what can I say?
Yeah.
But yeah. But I think that's part of it. I think one of the reasons why they need a mother, why the boys need a mother, is because he's concerned about them. He's concerned about losing control of them.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say, do you remember that moment when you opened Chris's eyes to a movie?
Yes.
That changes it for me.
Thank you.
That he was really concerned about, quote, his boys.
Exactly.
And in a way, boy, we could write a whole story about this now. Like,
right. Easy.
So I will say the character I worried the most about in this movie.
Yes.
So, like, there was actually a moment of tension where I worried that something terrible had happened.
Edgar?
To Nanook.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
because
yeah,
Nanook
this time.
Is the real
oh, my
hero
God.
Of this movie.
He twice.
Nanook just kicks so much ass in this movie.
Yes.
I couldn't remember. I could not remember. I'm like, please tell me that Michael didn't hurt the dog, because now that we have dogs, because I did not have dogs in college.
Yeah,
and
oh,
I'm like, shiitake mushrooms. I can't remember.
He's fine, but it's a great moment where you just watch, I don't know who trained Nanook, but Nanook has some of the best acting in this movie, too. Where he rises up to the... And then the teeth are bared. And then as soon as Michael throws open the door and does that, kind of angsty vampire standing, silhouetted in the doorway moment.
Yeah.
And then Nanook takes his ass right out. Bam!
Yep.
I love the fact that, you know, in some movies they put an animal in to be cute, and I liked the dog.
No, Nanook is badass.
I really... Badass.
He's really is the hero of this movie.
Is that was Nanook a boy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, they referred to him as such on screen.
They did?
Yes.
Okay.
Could have been a girl, I suppose. I guess it depends on whether or not he'd been neutered.
Oh,
he was an Alaskan Malamute, by the way, not a Husky.
Oh, there you go. Sorry.
Sam was Michael's brother, right?
Yes. Sam was Michael's brother.
I loved Sam. To where he was like, oh, the part where he's like,
my own brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. Oh, you wait till mom finds out, buddy.
Oh, yeah. It's such a brother thing to say, like, oh, you just wait. Just wait until mom gets home. You're going to be in such shit.
I also love when he's on the phone with the mom, and he's going, nothing's wrong, mom. I you know.
Yep.
He's trying to mollify her while at the same time he's flying outside the window.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was
so I didn't understand his logic. Because he's like, Michael's logic is, he's up against the ceiling, he's flying, he's unable to control it. Why would he go out the window?
Because he couldn't control it?
But he pulled himself to the window and out the window.
Chris, don't try to make sense of this.
that's kind of a tough one.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
You could write to the directors and say... The only reason he went out the window was so that he could be outside the window.
Outside Sam's window.
When Sam made the phone call.
Yeah. Maybe he was trying to unplug the phones? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yep.
Yeah.
It's a mystery.
So, favorite scenes?
It was a life-changing thing at the time, and it's still my favorite part of the movie. Okay. But, you know, it's Granddad's line at the end.
Mm-hmm. All the damn vampires.
One thing about living in Santa Carla I never could stomach. All the damn vampires.
And then their blank faces, and then fade into the credits.
Yep.
It was amazing at the time, mind-blowing, and still my favorite part.
That he knew the whole time. Yeah, but here, it's like another Harry Potter moment. Like, well, if you knew about the vampires, do you think maybe you could have? But then, I mean, then it wouldn't have been so funny, though, at the end.
It's not just that, but it's one guy, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't know who the head vampire is.
That's
so.
Good point. But it seems like, you know, he knew exactly what to do.
Well, he's the guy driving around with the stakes in the back of his Jeep for the whole movie.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
And he's even putting the fence posts in upside down.
Yeah. Granddad knows what's what.
Yeah.
He knows what's up.
So he's woke.
He's woke. Granddad's woke.
Totally woke.
I'm just saying.
He's woke, yeah.
Sharon, what's your favorite part of the movie?
Thank you for asking, Pete.
I'm glad I could.
There's so many.
Well, I'll tell you my second favorite part.
Oh, my God.
The Chinese food.
Oh, I was going to say that one. Oh, you stole mine. Damn it.
We're doing a great job tonight, Chris.
Yeah.
I like that whole illusionary scene. Oh, goodness.
This is good radio.
I think the dinner, then. If Chris is going to steal, both my favorite scenes involve food.
I didn't steal anything.
The scene when Max comes for dinner.
Nice.
And I liked the part where it just seems so normal. It just seems so like, yeah, you know, mom has a boyfriend, and of course the kids don't like him because they never like the guy that's stepping into dad's shoes.
Right. Which is why that's such a great scene when he goes, no, I think I know what's going on here, Sam. I'm not trying to take your mother away from you. I think that's a great
right.
Yeah.
And it also makes sense that Michael's grumpy here.
Yes.
Well, you're the man of the house. And I'm not coming in until you invite me.
You're invited.
Thanks very much.
Oh, I have a You Must Be Max anecdote.
Tell me.
So, in college, my friend Eddie had a good friend who was attending BYU. And that's about an eight-hour drive from Denver to Provo. So one evening we decided, well, he really wanted to see her because she seemed to be in distress. And he said, if I paid for the gas, would you please drive? And I said, yeah, sure. So we drove all night long to Provo, and we get there, and we come in, and I meet, I believe her name was Emily. I mean Emily. And she goes, I heard something in the background. I said, oh, what's that? And she said, oh, that's my roommate, Max. And I said, oh, you have a guy roommate? And she said, no, it's a girl. It's two exes. And so I went over and I knocked on the door and she opened it. And she's this absolutely stunning redhead. And she goes, oh, you must be Pete. And I said, and you must be Max.
Nice. Did she get a reference to the movie from
that? She did. She got a big grin from that and invited me into her room, and we talked for many hours, and then some other things followed.
What other things?
Reading comic books, really.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow. What's your favorite scene, Pete, in the movie Lost Boys?
I think my favorite scene, honestly, is Nanook knocking Paul into the bathtub full of holy water.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, that was good.
I think that's totally boss. I can't hardly see it. But so that's, I think that's my favorite. Having rewatched it, I was like, oh no, that's definitely my favorite scene.
It's really good.
But I really liked the scene that you brought up earlier, which is, I pray that I'll never have to call you.
Right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So Chris.
Yeah.
Tell us yours.
You already asked me. I had two.
You did.
Oh, you did? Oh, I'm so sorry.
I stole yours? Does this ring a bell for you?
You're all completely...
Oh, gosh.
We did the force on...
I have not been drinking tonight. I did teach school today, but I...
And the medication I'm on, I can't drink, so it's not...
I had a little podcasting fluid earlier, and...
podcasting fluid. Let's rate this movie, guys.
It was a red.
Let's rate it. I'll even go first if you want me to.
All right, Sharon.
Oh, do it.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. No, wait. On a scale of 1 to 5 droplets of blood.
Oh.
How do you rate Lost Boys?
I'm still doing gold pieces.
Okay.
I know I'm going to be higher than you two boys because I always am higher. Wait a minute.
Are you always
wrong.
High?
Wait.
I'm going to say.
I'm feeling plenty high.
You know, hold on.
Sorry.
4 gold pieces and 3 silver.
All right. Ooh. But the silver are blood.
So I think that was higher than Excalibur for me.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm just telling you. I think
4 and 3?
I really like this one.
4 and 3.
All right.
Chris?
Yeah?
How many gold pieces would you give this movie?
And how many droplets of blood?
I'm going to give this 4 gold pieces, 5 silver, and 7
5 drops of blood.
Drops of blood.
You rated it higher than me.
Yes, I did.
Wow.
Damn.
Okay, and here's why. Okay. 100% nostalgia glasses.
Oh, totally.
I mean, there are glaring flaws in this movie.
Yes.
But I think the pacing is fantastic.
There are not glaring flaws.
I think the whole thing about it's like the Dickensian coincidence of, you know, Michael running into David and Lucy meeting Max and them also having, like, coinciding
agendas. Well, they're the
agendas.
New family. I mean,
right, but, like, there was a whole boardwalk full of people out there. It's just too small a set of characters in such a large world for that to be realistic.
It's a large world.
Right.
Yeah,
you know, you could say that about any story ever written.
But mostly from Dickens, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
Wait a minute. And
it's affecting my judgment
Great
of this movie. But I really love the movie, and so that's why I'm giving it such a high rating.
Point proved?
Oh my God, expectations. Tale of Two Cities.
Are you talking about Dickens while I am trying to give my explanation for my rating?
Oh, no. Yeah, sorry.
Rude.
Sorry.
Damn it.
Okay, Pete.
In your face!
Pete, what would you rate this movie?
Honestly, from a combination of sheer Corey on Corey enjoyment, nostalgia goggles, and a few other things, I'm going to give it a solid 4.
All right.
See, I still rated it higher than you.
But the 4 gold pieces are actual drops of blood.
Are actually those bags of blood.
Bags of blood, okay. Well, you know, we are brothers, and I have one piece of advice.
What's that?
Kill your brother. You'll feel better.
Kill your brother!
I've heard that. I didn't believe it at the time.
Holy moly.
Fantastic.
All right. So,
what about the scene where they went into the church with the holy water and filled up their...
that was fun.
I forgot about that.
Okay, but
that's part of the choreo.
The
church. Right.
Three-on-Corey action.
Magic, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for real, the next movie that we're doing...
Now the next movie we're doing is the one that Pete already chose.
Yes.
Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger.
Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger.
And then we get to find out how it was that Survivor came up with the Eye of the Tiger song.
Right.
Which is completely inspired by this movie.
And I think Sharon picks after that?
I think so.
Or do I?
You chose Prince of Persia.
I chose Prince of Persia.
So Sharon chooses next.
Technically, Sharon chose Lost Boys.
Not really.
Oh, so I get two in a row.
No, wait a minute. Hold on. No, but you... I chose it a year ago, and you chose it this time.
No, you I didn't choose Lost Boys this
time. No, Chris did. Chris. Right. I was looking at Chris. Sorry, Pete, you're not in the room. I was looking at Chris.
All right, we will decide in between this episode and next who's choosing
next. We'll fight
one.
For it. We'll have to do arm wrestling or something.
Turn.
I don't know.
I was going to say, I think it's only fair if it's Chris's turn.
I think it's my turn.
I choose Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't matter that you chose a year ago. You still chose. So.
Or we'll have Matt choose.
Oh, there you go.
Matt, unfortunately, could not make it tonight. He had a deadline, so he could not join us. So he will hopefully return.
Matt's first book and enjoying it thoroughly.
Cool.
You know, and also Sarah wanted...
Sarah wanted to do Troll. Maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So
maybe we'll do that next Halloween.
Maybe we'll do all of them. At once. We'll just review all of Fantasy Movie-dom.
But until then...
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Oh, get real.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.
Michael.